Whispering Street. And here is Hope Winslow.
Hello. All roads lead to Rome, and many a whispering street leads to a neighborhood restaurant. That's where families eat on the maid's night out. That's where bachelors go and career girls. Many people told Ellen Latimer that she had the easiest job in the world, sitting behind a counter making change for and conversation with the customers of the Bluebird Tea Shop. But it wasn't such an easy job. It's hard to handle money hour after hour when you need money desperately. To count it with accuracy so that the slips and the amounts received balance. Often Ellen went home from the restaurant bone-weary and soul-weary. But she always brought her mother something good to eat and a heartwarming smile.
Pie, Jay, dear.
Oh, no, Mother. Eating a pie. And speaking of pie, here's a slice of strawberry chiffon pie. It's heavenly.
Oh, dear, the darling. The Bluebird certainly has a good taste to cook.
Yeah, we just hired her. She's the best yet.
You're the best yet. You're so quick with figures, and you have a way with people, too. Everybody likes you. That's why you were able to get such a fine job. And that's why you're able to keep it.
What is it, dear?
But it's only for a moment. It's just a stitch. Comes and goes.
Oh, we'll have your operation very soon, Mother, and then there won't be any more pain. The savings are piling up like mad.
Are they really? Mm-hmm. Well, not that I need the operation so badly, you understand. I can afford to wait.
Well, I can't afford to see you suffer one moment longer than necessary.
How much more do you need?
Less than $100. I wish I were a waitress and got tips.
I wish it were Christmas.
Last year, the management gave me $25. That would be a big help right now.
Yes, it would be.
Well, let's not think about money. Pie is the main issue of the moment. I'll get you a fork, Mother.
Thank you, Ellen. Oh, Ellen, you're such a good girl.
Ellen tried to smile at her mother, and she almost succeeded as she went to get the pie fork. Her step was quiet, and so was her face, but her thoughts were in a turmoil. They beat against her brain like small, sharp hammers.
A good girl. Oh, if Mother only knew the thoughts that race around in my head all day, every day. She wouldn't call me a good girl. Through rush hours, I sit and figure out how I can steal $80 and get away with it. Oh, not that I'd steal it for myself. But Mother's so sweet and so patient. And she'll die if she doesn't have that operation. And when I took the job, they gave me a big talk about borrowing and lending. Oh, dear, what'll I do?
I've got it.
The fork, dear?
No, the solution. I'll go to the bank and borrow the money. I'll go tomorrow morning.
But then you'll be in debt, dear.
Oh, it won't take me long to pay off such a small debt. There's a man who comes into the Cleveland, Mother. He's an awfully nice man, and we always have a little chat. His name's Roger Hamlin, and he's one of the executives in that bank on the corner of Clinton and Essex Street. Well, I'll take time off when they're cleaning up after the breakfast trade.
But we've never borrowed before, dear.
There's always a first time, Mother.
You aren't talking as distinctly as usual this evening, Ellen. I didn't hear that at all.
I was saying there's always a first time, Mother, for everything.
In just a moment, Hope Winslow will be back again. But first,
primarily, ensign means a flag. The word is easily traced to its beginning, the Latin signum, sign. The Anglo-Saxon S-A-G-N-E, signum, means flag. And the Norman ansonia also means flag. In the 16th century, the British Navy borrowed the term from the British Army, where the word ensign meant not only a flag, but a rank. Ensign bearer, the officer whose duty it was to carry and defend the flag. As a rank, ensign bearer was in use both in the French Army and Navy. Usage shortened the term to ensign. In 1862, the American Navy adopted the rank to denote a promoted midshipman. In this complex world, where word meanings are constantly changing, it's easy to be misunderstood. That's why it's a good idea to know your worth.
And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
Ellen presented herself at the bank next morning, somewhere between 10 and 11 o'clock. There were deep circles under her eyes. Mother had spent a bad night. She was more worried than usual. She asked if she might see Mr. Roger Hamlin. He was taken to a small glass enclosed office, and the man who was one of the Bluebird's steady customers rose from behind the desk and extended a cordial hand.
Well, Miss Latimer, good to see you.
Thank you.
I presume you're here on business, and I know you're pressed for time.
I just have a few minutes, really, so I'll come directly to the point. Mr. Hamlin, could I possibly borrow some money from the bank?
How much do you need?
$100. It's this way, Mr. Hamlin. My mother's an invalid, and she needs an operation desperately. The doctor is willing to wait forever for his money, but there are certain things that must be paid. The anesthetic and blood transfusions and a bed in the ward. I've been saving religiously for over a year, Mr. Hamlin. I have a little over $200. When I have $300, it'll be enough.
Well, there shouldn't be any problem. If you'll fill out these papers giving certain facts about yourself. Your salary, the name of your employer.
The name of my employer? Oh, no. No, I couldn't do that.
Why not?
Oh, no, because it's against the policy of the tea shop for its employees to borrow money.
But I'm sure they'd understand in a case like that.
Oh, no, I couldn't take the risk. Well, thanks for seeing me again.
I wish I could do something. I like you so much, Miss Latimer. I've always thought that you were one of the most attractive young women in town. And you have a fine personality for your job.
A fine personality won't put my mother in a hospital. But maybe something will turn up.
Yes, maybe something will. I'm glad you're taking an optimistic attitude, Miss Latimer.
Ellen walked away from the bank, her eyes clouded with tears. She reached the Bluebird just as the luncheon tray was about to come in, and as bills and silver slipped through her fingers, she counted mechanically. When the luncheon rush was over, she hurried home to fix her mother a bite of early dinner and to change into a less tailored dress.
You certainly are on the go every minute of the day. I don't know how you do it, Ellen.
A mere twist of the wrist, darling.
I'm almost afraid to ask, but was that man at the bank willing to help?
I'm sorry he couldn't do his thing. He wanted to, dreadfully, but there were certain rules. Oh, but keep your chin up, honey. It won't be long now. There are lots of things I can go without.
Just name me seven of them, or even one of them.
Well, Ellen, I'm such a burden to you.
Maybe it'd be better if I were dead. At least we have enough insurance to cover my funeral.
Don't you ever say a thing like that again, Mother. I couldn't live without you. You mean everything to me.
I know you're being completely honest, Ellen. I never was a better daughter on this earth, but I do not understand you too depressed. Oh, dear. It's silly. But lately,
Lately you've been feeling more pain. Oh, that's it, Mother. You don't have to answer my question, dear. I know the answer.
Yes, people said you have such an easy job, Miss Latimer. Such an easy job. Money, money, money sliding across the counter. There were more $10 bills and $20 bills than Ellen had ever seen that night. Her conversation as customers paid and left was interspersed with hopeless prayers. And when a slim man in a black suit and a clerical collar waited for his change...
Did you enjoy your dinner, Padre?
Very much, Miss Latimer, but there was something missing.
Oh? Oh, I'm sorry. I'll speak to the manager.
No, it doesn't concern the food. Your smile's missing, and it's one of the children's big assets.
Thanks.
Is something wrong?
My mother's ill, sir, and I'm worried to death. I keep praying for a miracle, but I...
The day of miracles isn't past, Miss Latimer. Always remember that. And I'll join my prayers with yours.
went all evening. And then toward the end of the evening, as the place was almost ready to close, a man came up to the desk. He was a stranger to Ellen. The Bluebird didn't have many transients. He slid his check and the bill across to her.
280 out of 10, please.
Yes, you're a stranger in town?
I'm here for a few days, staying at the Mansion House. But the food there is atrocious.
I hope you liked our food.
It was splendid. Real home cooking. Enjoyed it immensely.
Then you must prove it by coming back. Here's your change. 5 and 2 is 7 and 20 cents. 7:20, right?
Right. Good evening, miss.
Good evening, sir. And do come again.
He walked away, tall, well-dressed, just the ship passing the night. He reached the door as Ellen smoothed out the $10 and started to put it in the compartment of the cash register, which was reserved for pens. Her eyes widened, her mouth opened as the door closed on the man's broad back. The bill wasn't a $10 bill. It was a $100 bill. She sat staring at it. Because the restaurant was very nearly empty, nobody interrupted the mad thoughts that were now racing through her brain.
$100. He said 280 out of 10. It isn't my fault. He said 280 out of 10. $100 and Mother could go to the hospital tomorrow. If $100 means so little to him that if he'd think it was 10, he may never miss it. That means so much to me and Mother. It means life. I don't know his name. How can I give it back? I'll forget that he said he was staying at the Mansion House. I'll forget heaven helping me.
Under cover of the shielding counter, Ellen opened her purse. One small zippered compartment held her savings. She took out a $10 bill. She slipped the $100 bill into its place. She laid the $10 bill in the cash register and rang up 280. And 30 minutes later, she took a taxi home. When she entered the apartment where her mother was waiting for her...
Tired, dear? Oh, no. It was an exciting evening. I've got chocolate frosted and drop cakes for you, Mother. And something much better than drop cakes.
What do you mean, Ellen?
Well, Mr. Hammond at the bank arranged the loan for me. You can pack your suitcase tonight, and I'll take you to the hospital first thing in the morning. Oh, you're going to be well, Mother. You're going to be well. What do you know about that?
What do I know about it? I can't believe it. Ellen, dear, are you telling me the truth?
Have I ever lied to you, Mother?
Oh, not yet you haven't, but... There's something you must explain, Ellen. If you got the loan, why didn't you say something about it this afternoon?
Why didn't I say something about it? For the simple reason, Mother, that I wasn't sure I'd get it this afternoon.
But you went to the bank this morning early before you went to work.
What is this, darling? A cross-examination?
Something of the sort. Ellen, why didn't you tell me earlier?
Well, Mr. Hammond came to the tea room for dinner. He said he found a loophole, that the bank would give me a loan after all. And he brought the money with him.
Well, then why didn't you call me?
The place was jammed. I was busy every minute. I couldn't take time out from the cashier's cage. Please stop asking questions, Mother. I've had a very trying day, and I'm nervous.
Well, that's the truth anyway. You are nervous for a fact. Ellen, you're my daughter, and I can read you like a book. You aren't telling the truth, dear.
I am telling the truth, and I'll prove it. Just wait until I open the back compartment in my purse. Oh, darn zippers, anyway. They always stick. There now, Mother, what's this? Is it $100 bill or isn't it?
It's $100 bill, all right. But you didn't get it from the bank.
In just a moment, Hope Winslow will be back. Gold is considered more precious than silver. And because it is, we find it hard to understand why silver takes precedence over gold in the military insignia of rank in the United States. At one time,
except for the silver stars of generals worn on epaulets of gold. The color of an officer's insignia of rank depended on his branch of army service. Infantry officers wore epaulets of silver with insignia of gold. All other officers wore the opposite. In 1851, all epaulets were gold with silver insignia. But majors and second lieutenants had no insignia at all, except for a difference in size of the epaulet fringe. Between the Civil War and the Spanish-American War, most epaulets were abolished, and majors were given gold leaves to indicate their rank. But the poor second lieutenant had to wait for his gold bar until, and believe this or not, 1917. Regardless of the date of establishment, all military insignia have been a source of pride for members of the armed forces of the United States of America. And now, back to our story with Hope Winslow.
Ellen's guilty eyes were fixed on her mother's face. She wasn't very good at deception. Yes, her mother could read her like a book. No doubt of that. She tried to think of something plausible. And finally...
Well, as a matter of fact, you're right. I made up the story about Mr. Hamlin. Made it up out of cold cloth. I was afraid you wouldn't take the money if you knew it was given to me by a stranger.
A stranger?
There's a woman who comes into the tea room. I was very depressed, and I told her the whole story. And she loaned me $100 without interest.
Ellen, I don't believe you. Where did you really get the money?
Mother, you've never been so difficult before. I'm telling you the truth. Now, eat your drop cakes, and would you like some tea or a glass of milk to go with them?
I don't want any drop cakes, and I don't want any tea, and I don't want a glass of milk. You've never told a lie in your life, Ellen. That's why I'm so sure. For the last time, where did you get that money?
Darling, you can't meet my eyes. Your face is a confession.
A man gave me a bill. And he said, would I give him the change for 280 out of 10? He said 10, Mother. He was out of the shop before I realized that he'd given me a $100 bill instead of a $10 bill. He was a stranger. That part's true.
We must get it back to him somehow. We must find out where he lives.
Well, he's only here for a few days. He's staying at the mansion house.
We can take it back to him.
At once. It'll save your life, Mother.
And you'll be haunted for the rest of your life. I don't want my life bought at such a price, Ellen. Take it back, dear.
I don't dare face the man now.
You said that this Mr. Hamlin was mine. Do you know where he lives?
Well, he mentioned once that he lived in the Ellsworth apartment.
Well, go to him and tell him what happened. Maybe he'll take you to the mansion house and explain things to the man.
All right, Mother. I'll go. If I weren't a coward, I'd go alone. But I am a coward. Only a coward would have done what I did. But I love you so much.
Ellen Latimer walked all the way to the big apartment house in which Roger Hamlin lived. She kept telling herself that he might not be home. But when she rang the bell above his name in the lobby, there was an answering click. She took a self-service elevator to his floor. She knocked on his door. And the door opened.
Why, Miss Latimer, what are you doing here?
May I come in?
Certainly.
I didn't know which way to turn. And then Mother suggested you. If Mrs. Hamlin wouldn't object, will you do me a favor? It'll mean going out, and it's late.
There isn't any Mrs. Hamlin. There never has been. Except my mother, and she died 10 years ago. What is the favor, Miss Latimer?
So Ellen told her story, and Roger Hamlin sat listening with great attention. When Ellen had finished, he smiled.
Of course I'll go to the Mansion House with you, and I'll explain to this careless rich man that you didn't realize the mistake until you were counting cash. Don't worry, I'll be very tactful and very convincing. And as for the $100, I have a bill that'll match his in my wallet. I was planning to have breakfast at the Bluebird and give it to you when there was a lull.
But the papers to be signed. I can't have the money unless I give my employer his reference.
Oh, yes, you can. This is a personal loan for me.
Oh, but I can't accept a loan from you. A stranger?
Not a stranger. A friend. And one who would like to be a good friend. When you came into the bank today and asked for a loan, I was close to loving you. And now I've erased the word close. Ellen, please say that you'll accept the money. And me along with it.
$100 bills from Cupid. Well, that's the way things happen sometimes. So you must never be afraid to pray for your miracle. It may be waiting across the street or just around the corner. When Ellen was making change for a slim man who wore black and a collar that was turned backwards, whom she addressed as Padre, he told her that he missed her smile and asked what was wrong. And told her after she'd explained her problem that the day of miracles wasn't past.
And now here is Hope Winslow to tell you more about the Padre.
Yes, for you'll meet the Padre again when he says the right word to a young man who's been hearing all the wrong ones. So until then, this is Hope Winslow saying goodbye from the Whispering Street.
Whispering Street has come to you through the worldwide facilities of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.